running boom of the 70s came during simpler, pre-internet times. A unique cast of characters riding that wave came of age. You never knew who would show up, and races became household names, attracting capacity fields year in and year out. Co-hosts Ron Galluli, John Gorman, and Grant Whitney, inspired by the first Runners Reunion in 2019, speak with some of the characters of the era, share their stories, and where they are today. There's something for everyone in each installment of the Runners Reunion Podcast.
Good afternoon, listeners of the Runners Reunion Podcast. We're so delighted you're with us here today. Season 3 and Episode 7. It's a balmy, breezy day here in Boston, Massachusetts. It's Good Friday. It's also the second day of the Sweet 16, if you're following the men's and the women's NCAA basketball tourney. But we're not talking about basketball. We're going to return to our roots, return to what made that running boom from the early 70s through really to the early 2000s such an important part, especially here in New England. Our guest today, following on a recent theme of non-traditional approaches to finding their love and success in the sport, really piggybacks to some degree on our recent conversation with Paul Gorman. Our guest today initially cut her teeth as the younger sibling of two standout high school runners. She was interested in the sport, in an element of the sport at the time, but for understandable reasons, which I'm sure she'll share, that interest waned. And it was several more years before she even got interested and inspired to tie up the laces and start anew. I haven't given too many clues, but I know some of our listeners will be chomping at the bit and ready to identify our guest. But even before I do that, I do want to say, talk to us, folks. Podbean, if you listen to us there, Apple Podcasts, Google Chrome, we want to hear from you. We do want to hear your ideas and thoughts of either people to talk to or races to discuss. And so please, don't be shy. But without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to our guest and then immediately throw it over to our co-host, John Gorman. If you haven't gotten a taste yet who this might be, somebody who is an Olympic trials qualifier running a 240 marathon back in 1998, a standout half miler, a solid 10K PR, it is our pleasure today to welcome and have a nice conversation with Mimi Corcoran Fallon. Mimi, thank you so much for joining us on the Runners Reunion Podcast.
Thank you so much. It's such a pleasure.
Well, as promised, I'm going to immediately throw this over to Gorman, and we never know what's going to come from him. John, it's your floor.
All right. Mimi, buckle up. Okay.
Now, hi, John.
Well, welcome to the show. It's so great to see you. So sometimes we like to make things sort of current. So I just want to share with you an experience. Last Saturday night, we had our annual Willoway racing team party in Andover, and almost every year, they have a what's kind of called a lifetime achievement award, and that goes to a runner on the team that is kind of on the lower side later in their career, pretty much being competitive. The competitive days are over, and the person that received it this year was Nancy Cassaro.
Oh,
you know Nancy. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you competed with her. So I wanted to just give a shout out to Nancy. She came in the top 15 in the Boston Marathon twice. 1988, she came in the top 25 in the Olympic trials at 2:45. She won the 1986 Grand Prix series that you are very familiar with. She won it in her age group with 42 points. The next finisher with 17 points.
Wow.
Finished in her age group five times in four different age groups.
Wow.
So when I think of the Grand Prix, I think of you and Central Mass Striders, and I thought, well, this is kind of fast forwarding a little bit, you know, but I wanted to talk to you. I want to know if you want to share your experience with the Grand Prix, Don Druniak, and following this, you know, like you had like what, five or six races and all different distances, and it was a big rivalry between Central Mass Striders and Whirlaway. you know, along with the VAA and everybody. I think, because I ran for the Masters team when I first turned Master, and, you know, I ran for Dave Cassandran, and, you know, us and CMS were always like, you know, if Mark Donahue didn't show up, we'd have a chance.
Right, you know,
that kind of thing.
But oh, yeah.
Can you talk to us about the competitiveness of it? And
absolutely. Know. Yeah. So Don Druniak, he was pretty important in my life when it came to running. He was a great support, and he was fun. He wanted to win at all costs. He was very competitive. I had the blessing of getting involved with Bob Seveny because Don Druniak pulled him in because he knew he was quite connected with some very good fast runners. Even some of the Irish guys, I think, ran for CMS at one point. And so, yeah, and just a little side note, I just recently joined Liberty last year, Liberty Women's Running Club, and I just recruited Jackie Shaker, who was a CMS teammate of mine. And I was talking to Jackie about it, and we're going back 32 years that I started with CMS. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it really got me hooked on running and gave me the platform of, in order to be a good runner, what you need to do. A lot of fun.
That's great. What a great way to kind of kick things off. Yeah. And as we were talking kind of in our prep meeting, do I have this right? There probably, you would say that you had been involved with four or five different running clubs over your running career. Is that right?
Yep. That used to be the big joke with amongst us closer friends. Like, what club is Mimi running with now?
Well, you got to give us a list, right? I mean, come on. You know, I've teased it. You now have to deliver on the, you know.
In terms of the clubs, the running clubs? Oh, yeah. So I let me see if I can try to do this in order. So I started with Central Mass Striders. I think I then went to the BRC, Boston Running Club. Then to the BAA, then HFC, and Liberty.
Liberty.
I think that's pretty much the order.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yes, John.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, my God. How could I forget this? The first running club was Tri-Valley Front Runners with Larry Olson. I can't believe he was huge in my life.
Name from the past, yeah, Larry.
Oh, wow.
Larry Legend, right?
Yes, yeah. He is, exactly.
John, were you fact-checking? Is that
so I had a question. So I you said HFC, and I'm thinking HFC. I know they are in the Grand Prix and everything, but they kind of blossomed as far as a club, haven't they? Like, they used to be kind of just a small club, you know, a drinking club, and they seem Absolutely. To be a lot more competitive now.
Yeah.
Are you going to be competitive with Liberty? I mean, how's Liberty
fall? We are, and that, and to be honest with you,
involvement with that,
yeah, that's really the only reason why I left HFC to go to Liberty under USATF guidelines. Like, my USATF numbers with Liberty, just because they do have very competitive women's running, whereas HFC, it was kind of a struggle to get women, but at least a team to compete. And you get to a certain age and you know you're not going to set any more PRs, right? So you want to go out and have fun with it. And the way you do it is with your teammate. It's a group. So that's how that sort of break went.
So you'll probably go back to HFC for the pub races.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right? Right?
No.
No? Oh, so you're going to wear Liberty at the pub races?
Yeah.
All right. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a fixture of the scene here in New England. You know, the prominence of the clubs, the prominence of some of these names and clubs have been around for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And so that's quite a legacy and quite a commitment. So we've cut, and you've already, you know, basically answered the question. You're still competing. And so tell us a little bit about how that sits for you now. And then eventually we're going to bring ourselves all the way back to the beginning and kind of maybe move forward a little bit.
But yeah, sure. No problem. So, yeah, I think what's helped me stay in running and competition and with the team is this whole new age grading thing, which, you know, every once in a while, Jimmy's got to re-explain it to me because, you know, even though I'm coming in 10th or whatever, he's still saying, well, if, you know, if you're all on an even playing field and your age was X, then maybe you would have been in the top three. And I go, oh, okay, but I still was really 10th, you know. But that kind of keeps me involved. And like Liberty likes to travel to more of a national scene, so we went to Atlanta in February. We're planning on running a few more national championship races, which is great. You know, something I really didn't even do when I was an open runner. We were so blessed in New England, right? In order to get good competition, you just went out your back door and there it was.
So what kind of distances do you think you'll be racing coming up with Liberty?
So tomorrow I have the Grand Prix. It's a 15K in Upton. And then a couple 10Ks, the James Joyce Ramble, the national championship is in April. Once again, right in our backyard. Maybe New Jersey, I'll go do the 12K and that's the national championship race. And then probably get ready for cross country and maybe eventually go to nationals.
Nice.
Yeah.
So take us back a little bit. Two brothers who kind of, did the kid sister want to keep up? Or was it the two brothers that said, come on, you have to come because we want to, you know.
No, I wanted to keep up with everything, whether it was running or eating. If you snooze, you lose in my house, right?
Right. So tell us a little bit about that. Mendon, Massachusetts. Is that home?
Yep. Yeah, very small town west of Boston, I guess you would say. Sports wasn't big, but it was more, you know, for the men, for the guys, whatever. And I dabbled into running a little bit and realized no other women were running. So I kind of put that aside for a while.
Let's dive into that a little bit. So so your brothers were how many years older?
So 2 years and 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so did you find yourself, were you running varsity with them? Were you running JV? What was that kind of the, or did it matter even?
It didn't matter. All I knew was I was last all the time and I was the only woman on the team.
So was it one season then? You did one season and said that?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So I went and watched.
Then you went and watched. Fair enough. So do you think that reality, you were the only one out, and it wasn't like you had, you know, success because you're the back of the pack, understandably on the one hand, but disappointingly on the other, I can imagine. Do you think that affected your decision or explained partly why it took so long for you to think about coming back and tying up the shoes again?
Yeah, probably. I really think once I got back into running, which was after college, I thought just from a healthy lifestyle, I needed to do something. So that's how I kind of picked up running again. It was just more for fitness.
Right. So our pre-meeting, it sounds like you graduated from Mount Ida, roughly 1984. Mm-hmm. And you got your first job.
Yep.
And that's the time when most people, if you've been running straight through high school, college, it's like you get the first job, that's when you stop because now I have all these other responsibilities, whatever. But that's when you start again. So give us a story. There's got to be a story there somewhere.
Yeah. You know, it's hopefully it's not the story you've heard many times before, but it was basically on a challenge. I met an older gentleman. He was in the engineering department. I noticed he'd go out for runs, whether it was lunchtime or after work, and asked if I wanted to join. And so I started running with him. And he had proceeded to tell me a story about how he always wanted to run the New York City Marathon and he would never get in because it was a lottery system. So we both made a pact that if we got picked, we were going. So we both put our name in the lottery. And once again, he did not get picked, but I did.
Wow. Okay. So I want to pause there because I know this is not the rest of the story, to paraphrase the great Paul Harvey. How long had this kind of lunchtime running thing gone? Was it a couple of months? Was it a couple of years? What? Give us a sense.
It was probably just about a year or so. Yeah. Yeah.
So he didn't get in. You did.
Yep.
So walk us through what happens next.
So, you have to fill out, you get picked, you have to fill out the application. How long do you think it'll take you to run the marathon, whatever? And I put 4 hours down because, once again, I'm just out running. I'm not checking splits or doing workouts or knowing my Garmin, how long I've gone. I put 4 hours down and my parents, you know, they think I'm crazy. What are you doing? You're going to fly to New York to run a marathon? Like, I said, yeah, I'm going. I promise. I made that promise. I'm going. So I go to New York City Marathon. I figure out my way around first time really, I think probably in a plane actually. So I get to the starting line and I'm, you know, I'm looking at all the stuff that goes on before a marathon. I'm going, what am I getting into? And anyway, so I had a great experience. I enjoyed it. I ended up running a 3:09, which then qualified. I didn't even know. I get home and to my good friend, Larry Olson, he goes, do you know you just qualified for Boston? So what do I do in, you know, in April? I run Boston.
Okay, yeah. Got to ask the question. How much were you running?
You know, it's funny. When I was going to do this podcast, I did keep some running logs and I looked back and, you know, once again, no Garmin. So we were estimating how far or whatever. And, you know, I was probably running 40 miles, 50 miles a week, but it was just straight running. And I was running with people that were faster than me. And so in order to keep up, you know, in order not to get lost or get dropped, you know, you just kept up. And I guess that type of training worked for me in the beginning.
If you think back to those days, we're talking 1989, if I got this right.
Yeah.
You know, if you said prior to that marathon, what would you say was the longest distance you had run prior to running that first marathon?
Maybe 10 miles.
Oh, so you did, 10, 12. You did everything the wrong way then. You
know, yeah.
Contrary to conventional wisdom. Huh? That's pretty amazing. So what did it?
I just had a question. Larry must have been pretty impressed with that first effort, 3:09.
Yeah.
Did he offer any additional encouragement? Obviously encouragement, but as far as direction on your training? Because I'm kind of blown away that you're just hopping the sport that's essentially your first race and you run 3:09.
Thank you. Larry was a huge part of my life. I was heartbroken, you know, when he passed, but yeah, I joined his running club, the Tri-Valley Front Runners. There was, once again, I was, at one point, I'm sure I was the only girl. There was a few of us after that, but I just did whatever Larry told me to do. You know, we'd show up, you know, whether it was a track workout or just a hard run on the hills of Millis, Mass. It's pretty much, nothing really formal, just ran hard.
So between, call it, I guess, November and April, April of 90, November of 89.
89 to 90, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any memory of any substantive change in the way you were approaching it? Were workouts, however you define them, added? Was it, were you paying more attention to saying, well, maybe I should run longer than 10 miles, you know, in prep for the next one? Anything like that?
Maybe a little bit. It got tweaked, but nothing crazy. Remember, I'm still working. I don't know a lot about running. Mm-hmm. I'm just getting kind of introduced to the sport. Larry took me under his wing for sure. Probably after Boston, when I only, you know, ran 2 minutes faster. I thought, I know. I don't want to sound, you know, because trust me, I didn't even know what I was doing, you know, showing up there. Who knows what I was wearing or, you know, what I ate or drank before. But yeah, it took a little while to catch on and figure out, okay.
Well, our Boston Marathon volume winner on this podcast is John Gorman. So John, please jump in here.
Yeah, so I just kind of go back to Larry and Tri-Valley. This race that you're running tomorrow, the Frank Nealon race, that's sort of like a homecoming for you, isn't it?
Exactly.
You know, it's in Upton, Mass. It's in Millis. And so,
right.
So is everybody going to have like ribbons and balloons and everything for you? Or?
Well, it was funny. They were lucky enough and they got the race last year and I ran it, the 15K. And I felt Larry out there with me.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, he was a dedicated guy. I mean, he was every race he went to, he was there and he was kicking ass.
I mean, yeah, I hope I learned from him all the positives, because I'm telling you, he didn't come from much and he'd be the first one to take his shirt off his back for you.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a good mentor for me.
Yeah. So you, a self-described, still a novice, a neophyte after that Boston. Did anything, because you're still working, that's obviously a big deal as somebody in the early 20s. Give us a sense as to what is going on in your mind as you've now had two, sounds like pretty positive experiences, two PRs, two marathons, two races. You know, that's kind of like a, that's a twofer. That's 100%. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
What's, you know, seeping into your mind, or are people talking to you about that? It's like, Mimi, you should do this.
So what had happened is, so I left my first full-time job in Watertown, Mass, and I got a new job in Marlboro, another full-time job. And somehow my name got pulled out of a hat. I had to write an essay if I wanted to go out to Boulder, Colorado for 3 months to train at high altitude. Now, at that time, I hadn't even broken 3 hours in the marathon or whatever. And I was like, oh, boy, this is going to be a long shot. So I sat down, had somebody help me write this essay. So fast forward, I get picked. So I asked my employer, said I'd like to take a leave of absence for 3 months to go run out in Colorado. Well, they were like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And I said, okay, I'll see you later. And I quit my job. Thank God my mother was so supportive. My parents were great. My mother, especially. I quit my job. I go out to Colorado for 3 months. I train. I have no right being out there. I mean, there was Alyssa Hill, a track run. I mean, I was like, I wasn't a runner at that time.
Well,
you know,
well,
I mean, I was running, but I wasn't. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm running with Division One people, and I'm like, what's Division One mean? So I was blessed. Everybody was so nice to me. They were great. The people out in Colorado I still keep in touch with. They've been great friends. I'm so blessed. But I come home. Now I don't have a job, but I got running.
So you just said, hadn't even broken three yet. If you take yourself back to that decision point, what was it, do you think, that said, you know what, I'm going to do this? And yes, it means, you know, they're not going to take me back. So I'm just curious about that. You know, something was going on that you said it was worth trying.
Yep.
Or maybe not. Maybe it was some other voice, literally a voice, that said, do it. So can you, any thought about how that might have happened as you now look back at it after all these years?
Yeah, sure. So a couple takes on that. So one, I really was just getting into running and realized, wow, I really like this sport. This is, you know, really fun. So that, and two, even young age, I always thought life was, you know, short. Take every opportunity you can get and run with it. Okay. And that's kind of how I approached it.
Can you give us a little more sense? Because, I don't know how many people know, you know, this was a TAC or USA, you know, track and field predecessor kind of training camp.
Yeah, it was sponsored through Nike.
Okay.
And I think USATF might have had something to do with it, but it was more Nike sponsored. That and the Boulder Bank.
And what was, can you give us kind of a sense? It's 3 months. So idea that you be, was it broken down by event group or anything like that?
So not even. So what they did is they, you know, everybody stayed at a different host family. And we had organized practice 3 days a week. And then you kind of filled in the blanks from there. But, you know, they're also great out in Colorado, out in Boulder. I swear, nobody works there. We'd get together pretty much every day. There was somebody to run with. And it was such a great experience.
And was this women only?
It was, yeah.
So would it be fair to say that this was really the first time that you had a cohort? I mean, a group, a team, a, you know, that kind of.
Yeah, I got to know Jean Olds, Jean Can now. Who is also, she was a very good runner. She actually ran, she was Division One. She ran for Bruce Bickford. She ran for, I think it was Nike Boston. And still in touch with her.
And so your comeback from that, you don't have a job. So yes, I can understand the,
yep.
I'm doing this, but I've got a reality here. Parents obviously saw something, saw a change in you perhaps, as
yep.
and they felt it worthwhile to support. Can you pick up the thread for us?
Yeah, sure. So I knew I had to get some type of job. So I got into waitressing. Never waitressed in my life. I picked up that sport and it gave me the flexibility to run when I sort of wanted or when I could or when I was meeting up with certain people who ended up being my wonderful friends and training partners all these years later. So yeah, that's when sort of the whole CMS and the Bob 70 came into play. And that's how I got really introduced to New England running.
So when you were doing that, if you're going out to Colorado, were you in your mind saying, like, I want to take that next jump, you know, the jump from 240 or 245 down to 235, whatever. Was that your main focus with the running rather than a job or profession or?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I didn't even know about marathon times. I didn't even really know about Olympic qualifying or times, or, you know, I just knew I wanted to run. And I just wanted to learn as much about the sport of training as I could. I didn't have any real goals that I remember. I just was out there to run.
Yeah, earlier we were reading some times off to you that you had some times you didn't even know you ran.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention. I didn't pay attention to that. I knew a group was showing up at a certain time. I was there.
You're 10 miles faster than you think. We just found out about an hour ago. Right.
So, now, I don't think of waitressing as probably the best match for somebody who, you know, you're on your feet. And do you want to be on your feet and then go out for a hard workout? Do you want to be on your feet and then go out for a long run? So any reflections back on the plus minus of going that route?
Well, I'll be honest. You know, I think the best kept secret, I think that actually helped me.
Okay.
The waitressing. So, you know, you'd go out for a hard run, a hard workout, whatever. And I mostly worked nights. Okay. I think just walking around the restaurant, cleaning the lactic acid out of your legs, I think it helped. You think about all the people that are sitting down at desk jobs. What do they have? Back issues, shoulder issues. I've, you know, knock on wood, I could probably count on my hand how many injuries I've had. Mm-hmm. And I've been in the sport probably 30 years-ish.
Okay, this is going to be a non sequitur. What is the heaviest tray that you can recall lifting?
Back in the days when I was catering, we lifted pretty heavy trays. Yeah, and the plates nowadays, they're so heavy. As I'm aging, I'm starting to feel it now. You know, I'm pushing almost 60.
Okay.
So now the hands are getting a little arthritic. And
he's been carrying me around for 25 years.
That was for our listeners. That was Jimmy Fallon of Providence College and Mimi's husband in the background. We might have to have Jimmy on for his own episode. Gorman.
Yeah, he'll be the funny one.
So I have to say that you must be a pretty darn good waitress, because what do you work in Boston?
I'm at the Capitol Grill now.
Yes.
Now that's
a top notch waiters and waitresses. So you must.
I'd say I'm a professional waitress and not a runner.
Where'd you work before Capitol Grill?
I helped open Davio's in Foxborough.
Okay. Yeah. Those are good. Those are great. Top notch.
Yeah.
So you must be good.
Oh, thanks.
You just tell from your personality.
Thank you.
So as you're migrating through this transition of avocation and occupation, you know, a little bit of both here, you've already tested the waters on the club scene. I mean, the running club scene. I'm not going to suggest that you were testing the other waters.
That's okay.
Where are you finding connection? Is it coaching? Is it other women? Is it different kinds of feel? Is it the New England running scene? What's kind of keeping the ball moving forward? So to speak?
You mean just in general?
Definitely
my teammates. I am so blessed how many people I have met in the sport and how much respect I have. I mean, when you just look around New England, I mean, if it's not Joni Benoit, who's been inviting me up to her race for the last 20 odd years, if it's all the great coaches that I've had, my teammates, still like my best friends, you know, if Kristen Beeney, Chisholm, Maribel Sanchez, God rest her soul, you know, she was a great teammate. I am just super blessed.
As we look at your profile, And this is open. I'm not really answers here. It seems like a lot of your, you know, most noteworthy performances happened in a span of between, let's call it 1996 and the early 2000s. What was happening at that point where things seemed to be connecting on multiple dimensions?
Absolutely. Yeah, it got more structured. That's when I, you know, really was with Bob Seveny and his group. That's where it really took off. I mean, he trained us hard, but it's exactly what I needed. He got the most out of me. I don't think anybody could have done what he did.
So for those who don't know Seveny and, you know, his legacy, what stands out to you if you were sharing with somebody who didn't recognize the name and who was?
Yeah, absolutely. A man that was so committed to his athletes, mm-hmm. beyond belief. His athletes were his everything. Like whether it was trying to get you into races or trying to get you to the best ability that you could be, he was the one. He was going to be your cheerleader. He was going to be there for everything.
And when you think of your training group, you know, was it mostly men and a few elite women, or how?
No, he separated us. He separated us, you know, the boys from the girls, but, we stayed in a group. Like, all us women worked out together, except for probably Kristen, who was just that much better than us.
So 5 of you, 10 of you.
Yeah. 5 of us. There was 5 of us that every Tuesday, every Friday, every Sunday, he was there.
So what would, if you think about Tuesday, you know, Friday, Sunday, You think of those days of the week, what does that conjure up, you know, in terms of what you would be doing?
And it was pretty much the same. Every Tuesday, we're over at Newton South or Newton North doing our track workout. Mm-hmm. Every Friday, we were in Lincoln, depending on what we were training for, whether it was a tempo run or a marathon predicted pace. And then Sunday was long run in Lincoln Woods.
How did it feel? Because you didn't have much wear and tear. You know, given the way how you started, you know, if I said the track, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, how do you feel about, you know, doing track work and doing those things?
I love doing track workout as long as I have somebody with me.
Do you prefer roads or trails? You know, like Lincoln, you know, Lincoln.
I enjoy the roads because I don't have that high leg lift, so I trip very easily. You know, I need to be on the roads.
Okay. Even to this day. Okay.
Yeah. I just, you know, not having that. I never felt like I had that fourth gear, fifth gear, whatever you want to call it. Like I'm slow and steady. You know, I can go forever, but just not terribly fast.
Well, you look at your 10 mile, the 58 minutes, which we alluded to. You look at the 117 and a half. Again, that was in 2003. And that was just after you, and so we got to mention the fact that you ran the Olympic trials in 2000, and you qualified, 2 years prior to that at Grandma's. Tell us a little bit about that race, because that one has kind of put you on a map in a different level, it would seem.
Yeah, Grandma's was a good race. I think once again, I've had, you know, several years under my belt of running and consistent running and sort of learning the sport. We had a great group. Julie Peterson, who you all know from the North Shore, was great. And we trained together. We did everything together. And we did our marathon predicted pace runs together. Every week we would add a mile. We got up to about 13 miles at our marathon predicted pace. And that's what Sev drove his car with us. She checked every mile. You couldn't go any faster. You couldn't go any slower. And it worked. We both ran. I ran 6:09 right to the, you know, the penny. And that's what my marathon pace to run was, 6:09.
The question I have is, so when did you start beating Jimmy?
poor Jimmy. You know, like when I think I didn't know much about the sport, you guys really worked hard. I mean, we at least drank water. You guys didn't even drink water back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
most of them.
If it was
from a hose. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, I think he's had massage therapists that say his tissue's like buffalo meat. Like the poor kid, he's just.
Well, I was going to segue in a slightly, I hope to a little different arc, but you know, Gorman got us there. But I do want to circle back just for a second to Grant. Yeah. when you accomplish, if you go back to the moment you cross the line and you realize you can still walk and, you know,
yep.
all that stuff, what did you feel? Or as you look back on it now, all these years later, what do you remember of that moment?
I would probably do it a little differently now that I know what I know now and I've seen a lot in my day. I probably would have been a little happier and a little better to myself. Instead, I was like, I can run faster. Why can't I run faster? You know, I mean, I know that's probably natural, but probably should have enjoyed it more. You know, I went out, I remember specifically, I went out running the day after grandma's and Seb was so mad at me. He was like, what are you doing running the next day after marathon? I was like, I don't know. I just thought I should run. I run every day. And I just was like, next, what's up next? You know,
you moved right on. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, since John already teased it, we do have to circle back to, you know, another pivotal personality in your life and in your career. And we have talked to several in that Providence College beat, if you want to call it that, aside from the fact that Gorman and Bluley cut their teeth in the greater Providence area anyway, or, you know, Rick and URI and all of that stuff. So I guess you could say there's the running club scene, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to find a life partner. So give us a little scoop.
But once again, very, you know, I keep repeating, I'm so blessed at the people I've met, including my husband. I was very good friends with Randy Thomas, who lived in pretty much the next town over from me. He lived in Millis. He coached at Medway, one of the M's, and he also coached at BC. And when I was having trouble trying to find an indoor track, he said, well, why don't you just come over with the girls? We work out on Tuesdays, be at Harvard, and you can jump in. So great. Well, Kathy Franey was also his assistant and just happened to be Jimmy's roommate. And so fast forward, they thought we would make a nice little couple. So we met up and been dating ever since. We're going on 22 years married, known him for about 28 years or something. Yeah, and kept me in the sport and once again introduced me to wonderful people, the Ray Tracys of the world, who are just great people.
And back in those days, did you run together or was it one of those things?
That Yeah. Actually, Jimmy decided he didn't want to run anymore. Mm-hmm. And then he met me and he got back running.
Okay.
And so for many years, he's always beaten me. But, you know, like I said, he's not getting any younger. His poor body's breaking down.
Yeah, we're not going to go to the, I forget how you described the masseuse, described his.
Dry buffalo meat.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. And so, you know, help us continue this conversation forward. You know, Olympic marathon trials in 2000. Yeah. 98, you're saying, yeah, I can go faster.
Yeah.
When you look back to the trials themselves, was it a positive experience?
It was.
Yeah.
It was great experience. All of them. I qualified for three of the trials. And yeah, they were great. It was great training because I always had, you know, great training partners. That's one thing Bob 70 instilled in us. You know, you work together, you stick together, and great. Go ahead.
Was 2000 the first?
96.
You did qualify for 96.
Yeah, 96 was the first.
Okay, so 96, yeah. 2000.
And then 2004.
In 2004, okay.
Yeah.
And would you say they were similarly positive experiences or was one, you know, heads?
Yes, for sure. For sure. I was with Seb for the whole time, which was great. Yeah. And I just knew what to expect. We didn't change anything. There was no magic formula.
Mm-hmm.
It was just hard work.
And would you still call yourself, because that's where your notoriety really is, you know, the longer you go, you know, 10 miles and up. When was the last, or what was your most recent marathon? Maybe that's how old.
I haven't run a marathon in, it's probably maybe when I just turned 40. So almost 20 years ago. I'm not going to lie, Jimmy, block your ears, but I'm starting to get a little bit of the fire back in the belly. Maybe maybe to try a marathon when I turn 60. I don't know. I've been healthy for many years. I've been consistently training. So maybe.
So, I mean, do you remember consciously saying, you know, this is it, I'm done with it, or I got to worry about how this is going to, you know, affect me long term? Do you remember?
So my mom lived with me for a long time, and she was sick on and off for quite a bit. And probably the last 5 years, she was really sick. She just passed away in November.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. And so I didn't have a lot of time for training, at least for a marathon. So now I'm thinking, you know, that now that I'm not caretaking, that maybe I can start taking care of myself and sort of, you know, goes as we get older.
And understanding that there are a variety of circumstances that were influencing of being away from the 26.2. What did the shorter distances mean to you in that moment? You know, your rep is as a marathoner.
Yeah.
Understandably, you're a different point in life. You know, you're So what do you recall thinking? Are you more relaxed because the distance is shorter? Are you as intense? Or how are you kind of, maybe the word is rationalizing it in your head as you continue to put the miles in and go for it?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe if you can find it, you know, a coach that can coach older athletes might be able to answer that question, right? That's always it's just so hard to find somebody who understands aging athletes. I mean, my personal feeling is I really don't like the shorter stuff. Now, do I not like it because I'm just not fast at it, or it's just hard for me, but I need to do it in order to get faster on the longer stuff? I don't know. I do it if it's a team race and they need me, I'll go and do it, but I'm not going to seek out 5Ks just to run.
Got it.
5K.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So because of this arc, and, you know, we call it, because, you know, unlike several of our guests who have hung up the shoes, you're still going. Yeah. And since you've spent most of your time on the roads, maybe a dabble on cross country here and track for
a little bit off track,
just for, you know, training purposes.
Right.
As you sit here in, you know, end of March 2024 and reflect back, say, March of 1990 or 95 or 98, what do you see as the difference in the sport today compared to back then? Pluses and minuses on both.
Wow. Scary is what I would say first.
Scary.
Because I think, because I mean, I went and watched the NCs.
Oh, you were there.
Balance track. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. We had a mutual friend, Parker Velby, run. And I was thinking, wow, they are running so fast in college and even high school. We're watching high school kids. Fast forward, you know, the times they're running in the marathon with the super shoes and the different training and probably the knowledge these coaches now have. The negative side of me says, geez, I wonder if I would have even gotten in the sport. Right. But then on the positive side, look at what the American distance runners are doing. They're putting us back on the map. They're, you know, rivaling like the Kenyans and the Ethiopians. And so it's the mixed emotions, I would say.
Yeah, I think all positives about the current state of the sport in a lot of ways. I think maybe one of the differences, at least from what I've seen, and again, I've been out of the road racing for some time now, is when we were going through that running boom years, road racing was a big deal, big events. There's still events, but I don't see a lot of the real competitive athletes necessarily, or the depth of the competitive athletes in the road racing scene. So I see that as being one of the changes. I know my kids don't seem to be interested in road racing, yet some of them have chosen the path of running through high school and college.
Sure. Yeah. You don't see as many of the younger kids as you do, like sort of my age and a little younger, sort of still running the road races. Yeah. And it seems like now that they're not really running races as much as they are like time trialed and paced and all that, which, I mean, it's working for them. They're running fast, but that's not what we used to do. We used to just go when the gun went off, you know, didn't matter who was there.
Yeah. So going on that, you see, you know, I go to road races and always see the 50-year-old, even 60-year-old divisions winners faster than the 40-year-old division winners. I mean, many, many, many times. So the Paul Hammonds of the world, you know, even Nimi, are running faster than people 20 years younger than them.
Which is sad, right?
Yeah, that's the way it's going right now.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm curious. You mentioned you weren't sure you'd be able to get in the sport now because you perceive, it sounds like you perceive that there was no way I could be today in relative terms. There's no way if you were 30 years younger, 20 years younger, that you could be competitive. But you would also have the same access to the shoes and the technology and arguably the same, coaching developments and such.
I don't think I would have the talent level, though, to run, division.
Okay. So you
I don't think you see it that way. That's how I look at it. Yeah.
And you also mentioned that you don't have a history of injuries. You know, thank goodness. That's amazing. Yeah. Because that's, again, more of a rarity than a reality.
Yeah.
But when you train, when you race, I presume you're, taking advantage of the footwear and everything.
Oh, yeah.
You like it? Do you how does it feel relative to the old days, or do you have?
God, the old days. I felt like I grew up, with a depression mother and Larry Olson. Like as soon as the shoes would wear, you'd get the shoe glue out, right? And put up, right? That's how I grew up. So anything was better than that.
Okay, this is the absolute first time that shoe glue has been mentioned in 3 years.
I'll mark that.
So Mimi, that's
write that one down.
Shoe glue. There we go. But we all were shaking our heads, listeners. All of us are saying, yep, we've been there. We've done that.
Yeah.
I never sniffed it once.
Yeah. We used to say the poor man's sport, right?
Yeah. So, do you think that technology has helped you in terms of being able to remain active in that sense?
I don't know if it's helped me just because I'm getting the super shoes when I'm in my 50s. Like, I don't know. That's a tough question. I mean,
you're not breaking down though.
I'm not breaking down, but I didn't break down when I was younger, maybe because I was younger. I don't know. Right.
No, interesting.
Yeah.
So if somebody asked you, Mimi, and as I think our time is drawing near on a Good Friday afternoon, if you had to look into your crystal ball, seeing what you've seen and where you've come from and where you are today, do you feel hopeful about the sport or do you have concerns? What's your prognosis? Are you excited about the future of the sport?
Yes, I am. I think if the good people stay in the sport, keep it pure. I do. I think about, the Randy Thomas, the Andy Ronans, the Ray Tracys of the world. They're great for the sport. Pure, hardworking. They give that to their athletes. Yeah, I do.
Gentlemen, I think it's the last round. It's closing time, but it's obviously much earlier at the same time.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. We've heard Sev mentioned in multiple podcasts, obviously a big personality and a big influencer during those times. So it's good to see that he was instrumental in a lot of your success.
Yeah. We're trying to, my friend, Kristen and I, we're trying to get out to California to see him. I'm not sure if you guys know, but he's been diagnosed with Parkinson's. So
did not know.
So he's doing okay, but need to go see him.
I did hear that. Yeah.
Yeah.
John,
Mimi, it's always great to see you on the roads at the pub races. And, It's nice to see that we're both still at it and we were talking earlier and it's all about, at least now for me, it's about the socializing and the camaraderie amongst runners, it's all about
friendships over the years.
I agree. Like I said, all my good friends are in the running world and I never thought that would ever be. Yeah.
And don't do like me when the last River Street get together and show up on the wrong day. Okay, so if you have a busy schedule, make sure you write it down and know which day to show up.
It's called age.
Right. That's a lot of advice. Yeah. I guess.
And, And on that note of levity, all of us, on behalf of Ron Galluli, John Gorman, thank you, Mimi Fallon, for joining us and giving us a taste of your non-traditional route to a life connected and imbued with what running and what running in New England is all about. Mimi, thank you so much again for being our guest on the Runners Reunion podcast.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.